Cedric Muhammad.
The scam to swindle people out of the homes they already owned was masterful. Here's how it worked. First, tell these homeowners that they own a bank, and that bank is your home. So if your home is worth $250,000, that makes you a quarter millionaire. You're sitting on a gold mine. You own your own bank, the bank of you. And you could use your bank to get more money. Just refinance. Everyone's doing it. Of course, hidden in the dozens or hundreds of pages of fine print are tricky clauses that allow the bank to raise your interest rate to a number you didn't know about, perhaps so high that you won't be able to repay your loan. But that's okay. If you can't repay it, we'll just take your house. Meet Peter Zalewski, Florida's up-and-coming real estate whiz.
Here we go.
He calls his real estate company Condo Vultures.
We have a very good sign because you have the final notice of eviction. So you can see this person was basically thrown out by the police department.
Peter deals exclusively with clients who buy up foreclosed homes and then resell them at a profit.
So people always ask, what's 25 cents on a dollar? This is it. This is what you're going to get.
Vulture basically represents a bottom feeder that goes in there and cleans off a carcass. Because they're dealing with so many different germs and so many different situations, they'll have to vomit on themselves, and there's some sort of cleansing process that occurred.
Look at the window. Oh, look at that. Looks like the house next door was on fire.
This is straight up capitalism. Somebody asked me, what's the difference between you and a real vulture? This is very simple. I don't vomit on myself.
See that guy standing next to the president? You know, the one that looks like a butler? His name was Don Regan, the chairman of Merrill Lynch, the richest and biggest retail brokerage firm in the world. He took the key position of Treasury Secretary so he could enact the tax cuts that the rich wanted. Regan then became White House Chief of Staff as the president started to fade.
Then they should give the president what 43 governors have, a line item veto. And
Who tells the president to speed it up? The man from Merrill Lynch, that's who. Things in America would never be the same again. The country would now be run like a corporation.
We're going to turn the bull loose.
This is Michael Moore. I am here to make a citizen's arrest of the board of directors of AIG.
From Michael Moore.
We're actually here to make a citizen's arrest.
Speak to my supervisor.
In the white shirt?
Yep.
Blue tie?
That's it.
Receding hairline?
The guy who brought you Bowling for Combine, Fahrenheit 9/11, and Sicko.
Who else do you want to leave the building?
Your cameraman and your crew.
Oh.
Come on out.
All right, they don't speak English. Donde?
This fall, the most feared filmmaker in America.
Can I talk to you, sir, for a second? Can you tell me what a credit default swap is? Can you explain a derivative to me?
Will reveal what happens when Wall Street tanks.
Stock markets crash.
Bankruptcy.
Foreclosures.
A global meltdown.
And the government bails.
By spending just a few million dollars to buy Congress, Wall Street was given billions.
The motion is adopted.
You know what Michael Moore is, don't you, Betty? The film director, he's filming me right now.
How did this collapse happen?
I got home on a Friday. Everything was just fine. I called back after my plane landed in Indiana, and all of a sudden we've got this crisis on our hands.
There's got to be some kind of a rebellion between the people that have nothing and the people that got it all.
Everything was being handled by the Treasury Secretary from Goldman Sachs. They had Congress right where they wanted them. This was almost like an intelligence operation.
This is straight up capitalism.
Where's our money?
I don't know. The people here really aren't in charge.
I guess you win.
We want our money back.
Capitalism offers people the freedom to choose where they work.
There isn't anything in here. I'm not going to be a gentleman's club hire dancer.
We're here to get the money back for the American people. I got more bags. $10 billion probably won't fit in here.
Okay, that's the trailer and a couple movie clips from Capitalism, A Love Story. You can let me know what you thought of it. I thought it was very entertaining. I thought Michael Moore, as usual, did a good job of making some complex things easy to understand or sound simple. Here's my movie ticket, just so you know. I did go. I went to the It doesn't say. Anyway, I saw it October 10th at 4:20 p.m. And by the way, any of you all trying to get into matinees, you know what I mean? 4:20 is not considered official. Just warning. Hint to the wise. Get in early. So anyway, you can go to CedricMuhammad.com. You can see what I wrote. I wrote a blog essay. It's called Michael Moore, It's Entrepreneurship for the Streets, Not Capitalism Nor Democracy. The problem with the movie is that it does not succeed in explaining what it is about. It does not explain what capitalism is. And the reason for it is because I don't really think anyone knows what capitalism is. It's a commonly used word. It's in the public lexicon, but there's no precise definition that I think anybody really understands. So essentially, and I have to be honest, those of you that are on the left, you were in a tizzy last year when people were calling President Obama a socialist. Well, it's the same thing. People are using a term to label people based upon the connotations of it rather than any type of real meaning. So at the end of the movie, when Michael Moore was lined up to answer the question of what would be the alternative to replace capitalism, all he could come up with was democracy. Did you all notice that? All he could come up with after, what, an hour and a half of a dossier was to say one man, one vote, democracy. Well, one of the things that stood out to me in the movie is that the kind of democratic reforms that you would need to carry out the economic revolution, Michael Moore and those on the left are not willing to carry out. They're not willing to leave the Democratic Party. You'll see Michael Moore torn each election between voting for the Democrat and voting for Ralph Nader. Not comfortable supporting Cynthia McKinney or Ron Paul or embracing ideas from the Libertarian Party. You're not going to get anywhere until you do a lot of the things that you're talking about outside of the two-party system. So that was something that stood out to me within minutes. I mean, the realistic and radical solutions that this country needs are not available inside of the two-party system. But I do think Michael Moore has replaced the late Senator Ed Kennedy as the conscience of the left. Rush Limbaugh is the conscience of the right. I believe Michael Moore is poised to emerge as the conscience of the left. Entertaining movie. Keeps you informed, keeps you engaged. But I don't see how you can make a movie about capitalism and not deal with the function of money, the nature of money, currency values, currency fluctuations. So he does a good job of throwing you a lot of different pieces, but he doesn't put them together to make a clear jigsaw puzzle. A lot of pieces, but he doesn't really put them together. But a very admirable, entertaining movie. I recommend that you all go see it if you haven't already. $10.50 that joint cost. Okay, now let me get to my little 2 cents bouncing off of the movie, okay? I'm going to move in and out. Let me go through some of the notes that I took throughout the movie on my BlackBerry. Michael Moore said this is capitalism, a system of taking and giving, mostly taking. He does try to lampoon those on the right who try to define capitalism in with these same terms, free enterprise, competition, the profit motive. He has an interesting moment where he talks about the 90% tax rate, saying that that was good. Very interesting. He equates the high rate of taxation with a greater distribution of wealth in America. And that's where, as I was listening, within 10, 15 minutes of the movie, the thought occurred to me, this is Cedric Muhammad speaking, that political activism and the electoral participation that Michael Moore practices or advocates is not up to the task of an economic revolution or an economic renaissance. I thought it was nice how Michael Moore juxtaposed the speech that President Carter gave, the economic malaise speech, with Ronald Reagan, the optimism, the Ronald Reagan as a figurehead or an icon or a symbol of the American brand in terms of optimism, the American dream. I wasn't impressed by his exposing Donald Regan's relationship with Ronald Reagan. I don't think Donald Regan is that sinister of a figure when you look at other people who were in the Reagan administration and in intelligence circles moving in and out. I don't think Donald Regan is that wickedly wise. I don't think he stands out that much. But, you know, Michael Moore did what he had to do. I thought that the movie did an excellent job in depicting the decline of certain industries, the automobile industry, airline industry, and the emergence of a satanic insurance industry that gives things such as dead peasants insurance. I liked the use of the two Catholic fathers, Father Dick Preston, I believe, and Peter Doherty, speaking on capitalism in terms of Jesus. Would Jesus accept what is defined as capitalism? The Citigroup memo on the plutonomy, this idea that 1% of the population was really ruling things and that they would have to watch out for the rise of the masses. I thought that was good metaphor. Over the years, I've written about something called the American plutocracy. It's just the rule of the wealthy. Whenever you see that word Pluto, plutonomy, plutocracy, it's the rule of the wealthy. Ferdinand Lundberg and others have written about that in greater detail. Get some books from the 1930s, 40s, 50s, 20s. You'll see they talk a lot more about the American plutonomy or plutocracy. I thought that the Isthmus and the Alvador State Bakery being held up as worker-owned businesses that could be exemplary or models of the new type of economic business firm was good. I don't think he went into enough of the reality or, you know, what tactics do these firms use to compete. Obviously, they're not going to be that much different. Maybe the way they organize themselves internally is different, but not the way that they participate in a market economy. But that was intriguing. So let me hit you with a little audio. You all know I don't watch much cable TV, but I did want to give you Michael Moore in conversation with a differing point of view to see what comes out of it. A lot of banter back and forth, but here is Michael Moore last week talking about his movie with Sean Dennis the Menace Hannity. Give me your two cents on this, and then I want to move into a discussion on how the debate over communism and socialism as it's taken place in the black community has been harmful, in my opinion. I think it has stunted economic development. We're following isms rather than doing the work of economic development. And we have better examples than Karl Marx and Adam Smith on how to do that. I'll read one a little later. Here's Michael Moore, Sean Hannity.
Look, you're a talented movie maker. You have a left-wing point of view. You don't apologize for it. I'm going to give you credit for that.
Right.
Because I think you're an unapologetic socialist, however you want to describe yourself. Fair?
Christian.
I'm a Christian.
Yeah, well,
but we have different views on the economics.
Well,
system.
No, but I believe in what Jesus said. That
so do I.
Are you Catholic?
I'm Catholic.
Yeah, really? Did you Christian. Go to Mass on Sunday?
Every Sunday, I went to theology.
You went to Mass this past Sunday?
I did.
Oh, what was the sermon about? You remember the gospel?
It was about Michael Moore and
No, come
capitalism.
On. You didn't know. You didn't know.
I go every Sunday. I go every Sunday.
Well, so do you remember the gospel this past Sunday?
I don't remember the gospel this past Sunday.
It was just 2 days ago.
I don't remember. I went to Saturday night. I went Saturday night.
You went.
I hate to say it, I got there about as late as I went to your movie. So.
Right, right. Well, yeah. The what you know, the Jesus mm-hmm. was very clear about the rich man is going to have a very hard time getting into
the
heaven.
Eye of the needle. That's right.
Yeah,
that's
and right. That the first will be last, and the last will be first.
Well, you're rich, so you're going to be last.
And we will be well. If I don't do good with what blessings I've received on this earth, that's right. Absolutely right. So, but we're going to be judged. You would agree with us by how we treat the least among us.
I totally agree.
Right.
Totally. So I'm very generous, as my wife is, with charity. And I think anybody that's been blessed, mm-hmm. and this gets to the heart of, I guess, the debate we're going to have here tonight. And I want to set this up. Look, Fortune magazine, and I don't know what your net worth is. You're a multimillionaire, correct?
I wouldn't say that. I would say that, I mean, if you count what the value of my house, I got a house in Michigan, I got an apartment here
Michael,
in New York.
So, you're a multimillionaire.
So those are worth a lot of money.
Okay,
yeah,
you're
now.
A multimillionaire.
Yeah.
You travel around. I know for a fact you have chartered Gulfstream Fives, the most expensive private jet in the sky. Just
no, I have never chartered a jet. I've never paid a dime for a jet. Are you kidding me?
You've never been in a private jet?
The studio, as you know, they when they send you out on a tour, they sometimes will send you around.
Right, because I was at a tarmac jet, and somebody pointed pointed out and said, that's Michael Moore's jet one night.
Well,
and I tried to wait for
say, you.
You
know, because I got a jet.
They didn't say it was yours, but you had charted. Right. But you're a multi-millionaire. Let me go over the numbers.
I'm not a multi-millionaire. I have done well. Obviously, my three of the top six documentaries of all time grossing made by me. So
$300 million according to Fortune magazine.
Well, not for me. That the studio gets that. Yes.
Okay, gross.
Yes,
but yeah, then, all right, $200 million alone for Fahrenheit 9/11.
Yeah, not for me. Yes, for the studio.
Not all for
correct.
You. But
not all. Not
according to reports, you got $21 million from Disney to direct.
Let's just establish that I do well.
All
so
right,
what's your
enough.
Point?
Well, my point is this, Michael, because I don't have a problem. You seem to want to trash capitalism in this movie. It's total trashing of it, and you do bring up religious quotes, and you do go to religious figures in the movie. Mm-hmm. See, I did go to see it, and you know you show video in the movie, et cetera, about families that I have compassion for, in this movie. Here's my point: if you really believe this, and you yourself own millions of dollars worth of property, and you make millions of dollars, if you cashed out, if you cashed out, you'd be worth millions. You don't even want to admit it.
No, I just admitted it. I just said that.
Millions. You're a millionaire.
I said that I have a house in Michigan. I have an apartment here. But you're so stuck on this. I know it upsets you. Why you keep bringing it
up? Because my point is that if the capitalist system allowed you to get here.
No, it didn't.
Yes, it did.
You think the capitalist system just opened the door up for me and allowed me to do this?
Well, let me give you an example. If you went to Cuba, and we'll get into this in a minute.
Yeah.
Do you think Fidel Castro would allow you to produce a movie and make millions of dollars trashing his system?
Well, I don't know. That's a good question.
You'd be killed.
Oh, I don't think so. Oh, come on. Killed. Are you still following that line?
It's not a line. I had a friend of mine whose family was killed by Castro when he came to power.
When he came, so what are we now, 40 years ago?
Okay, 40 years ago, he's still a murderer.
Yeah. What about the murder that's been done in our name in the last decade?
You're getting diverted here.
No, what do you mean diverted? That's what you don't want to talk about. That's the real issue, isn't it?
Not really.
What's been done in our name, in our Christian name, to Iraq, in Afghanistan,
Michael,
these other places.
Did you read the 9/11 Commission report?
Well, of course I did.
Okay.
I made a movie called Fahrenheit 9/11.
It says in the report, they were at war with us. We weren't at the terrorists that attacked the World Trade Center.
The terrorists are criminal thugs. They're not a
nation. They're not criminals. They're warriors. They're at war with us, the 9/11 Commission
reports. They're not warriors. You've seen the footage of them climbing on the monkey bars. And, you know, you're making them out to be such a big thing, like they're equal to us. Are you kidding me? Only a wuss would be afraid of that.
Oh, so
these are criminals. Who committed a mass murder of 3,000 people, and they should have been brought to justice by now. Why haven't they, Sean?
You know, well,
why
first, because it's not as simple as you just sitting here in the studio and saying, well, why weren't they brought to justice? I want them brought to justice.
Why have we taken now 8-plus years to...
I took the 9/11 Commission report at its word, and when it said they were at war with us, that's a war. Mm-hmm. You know, when they're dedicated... No. Wait a minute. If they ever get the bomb... Oh. If they ever, Michael, listen, Pol Pot, the killing fields, Soviet gulags and Soviet Russia, 30 million people.
Yeah.
I wrote a whole book, Deliver Us from Evil. I don't know if you've ever read it. Mm-hmm. You know, Nazi Germany.
Right.
You know, you can have human atrocity and mass murder in our lifetime.
Absolutely. These are horrible, horrible things that have happened. So your point
my point is obvious. So if we don't treat it as a war.
Why then we in this great country, this great free country, this great democracy? Why do we invade another country that did nothing to us?
It's not as simple as...
Boom. Hold on. Let me put the camera back on me. This is the point I want to get to. There is a difference between... I'll say it like this. People are confusing capitalism with colonialism and imperialism. It's a mess. This is my point. The conversation between Sean Hannity and Michael Moore devolved into something... that really had nothing to do with economics, because that's really the heart of the matter. It's, and this is also, we'll get into why President Obama won the Nobel Peace Prize. There's confusion over what colonialism and imperialism is. America is an empire for the most part. What you saw happen in Africa in the 19th century, classic example of colonialism. Now, it's not just an economic system. It can also be cultural. It's political. So people are confusing an economic discussion with a geopolitical one. Okay? So that's part of the problem. So if you go out and you try to argue with somebody what's capitalism and communism or socialism, you will end up having the same conversation that Michael Moore and Sean Hannity just had. Okay? Which we're not going to have here. So let me get to something from an unpublished writing. If you want to see more of my thoughts on the movie, you can go to CedricMuhammad.com. I wrote something called Michael Moore. It's Entrepreneurship for the Streets, Not Capitalism or Democracy. Is the use of money capitalism? Are free markets or the emergence of a market economy, is that capitalism? Let me read a little piece from what I wrote yesterday. It's on CedricMuhammad.com. I hope you'll consider commenting, because I'm going to actually work with dictionary definitions to make a point. And here's what I wrote, because this is really Econ 101. I say, addressing the confusion forthrightly, there is no real single definition of capitalism that I've heard that is accurate, because I've never heard it defined by anyone who is not a political ideologue. What some equate to capitalism is nothing more than the basic pillars of economic development. For example, the emergence of money, property rights, and markets is not capitalism, but rather it is the bet and the transition on social institutions that is often made when populations explode and when systems that are based on kinship and familiarity, like tribe, religion, ethnicity, and clan, begin to break down and personal contact becomes less frequent and commercial transactions more anonymous. Like, just think of a credit rating, a credit score. Why? What is the root of why you have a credit score? It is because people wanted to determine a system by which they could determine your ability to handle an economic debt without having to get to know you. So a formula takes in statistical probability, and mathematics takes the place of familiarity, a guarantor, a cosigner. So what really has happened is people have moved away so far to the extreme from informal systems or informal economies that are based on trust, family, religion, tribe, ethnicity, and it went to the extreme. There are great efficiencies in using instruments that are designed to work in a place where the number of people is so big that you could not know everyone. You couldn't sit there and have information on an accurate basis every day. So there's extremes. So capitalism is really an extreme of the it's an extreme form of economic development that revolves around impersonal contact, anonymous transactions economically. So the system thrives on nobody knowing anyone, people not being reliable. So you design instruments that allow you to manage and function trade and exchange. The reverse could be the same in a socialist system, but the difference is the extreme, and that is you have made the government God. So the socialist complains about the capitalist because they say that capitalism makes the individual and the business organization in the marketplace all powerful. And the capitalist has a problem with socialism because it makes the government all powerful in the name of the people. Both of them never live up to what they say. I've never seen a quote unquote capitalist society that didn't have these extreme excesses. And I've never seen a socialist society that didn't have governments that were inept at planning economies. So I write, every society, regardless of whether it is considered socialist, capitalist, or libertarian, has to deal with three needs and processes. One, language and communication. Two, agreement and enforcement. Three, trade and exchange. That's everybody. That ain't capitalist. That's not socialist. So as it relates to the system of trade and exchange that every society must be responsive to or develop, every society has to address the questions and the framework articulated succinctly by Nobel laureate economist Paul Samuelson when he wrote in 1948. These are the questions, like get rid of the ideology. Just listen to these questions. Whether you're Muslim, socialist, atheist, capitalist, just listen to these questions. This is what economics revolves around. question, what commodities will be produced and in what quantities? That is, of the numerous goods and services that can be offered, which ones will be selected? How will they be produced? That is, who will make them? What methods and resources and technology will be used? And for whom will they be produced? Who will enjoy and benefit from the rendered goods and services? And to put it another way, through what means will the nation's output be distributed among its population? I write that the questions that Samuelson poses get at the heart of every society, all of which have some commercial element, as the word commerce essentially means trading, buying, and selling. Even when money is not used, trading is taking place. These questions are also the crux of the debate over what capitalism is and what it isn't. At the heart of the confusion is whether or not governments, individuals, or business organizations, or some specific combination of all three, should be the preeminent factor determining the answers to these questions. So I go further. You can read that. You take your time with it. So that debate is not really how you learn how to create wealth. You don't learn how to create wealth or build prosperity in the intellectual argument that takes place between capitalists and socialists. That's more of a political debate. It's more of an ideological debate. It's a way for the world to be divided into categories neatly. I even think there's a divine purpose in capitalism and socialism and how they divide the world so neatly, particularly Europe. If you look at what's happening now with the European Union, I think Poland and Ireland just approved the EU treaty. What is that all about? Why is it taking Poland and Eastern European countries so long to join the European Union? Is the Cold War really over? Or were capitalism and socialism or communism ways to divide the world by more powerful people into compartments that could be controlled at a certain time? You all tell me. Now, there's a book that I want to throw up on the screen that is relevant to this debate, The Black Bourgeois, by E. Franklin Frazier. It's up on the screen. This book and this author are key to understanding why the black community in particular is still involved in this debate. Now, if you haven't read the book, you can still get it. It's a classic. The Black Bourgeois, the book that brought the shock of self-revelation to the middle-class blacks in America. Now, when I was in college, you know, these are the kind of debates that we would have on college campuses, Rutgers University. I'm still sure that they happen. So this is still ongoing among the youth, the professional class, folks that have jobs today. Now, I did put out The Entrepreneurial Secret, but there's another book, The Science of Business, that I have been working on. It's a bigger book. I'm going to wait for the right time to put it out. But I do deal with the role that E. Franklin Frazier and another scholar, Manning Marable, he's actually a very great historian, but he's a historian that runs his economic, he runs his research, which is excellent, through a socialist paradigm that is flawed. Not that socialism is flawed, but I think his understanding of Marx is flawed. I'm talking about Manning Marable, very well-known scholar, respected by many. So essentially, the problem in this debate is that people do not know how to handle the business organization or the entrepreneur. So you'll hear such terminology, as I've said before, petty bourgeois black nationalist, greedy business person, someone chasing profits. And you'll see that in the writings of Manning Marable and E. Franklin Frazier. I'm just going to hit you, fall back. This is a mental massage. I just want you all to really think about where are we getting the ideas that are influencing us. Go tell somebody. I'm going to give you all about 10 seconds. I'm about to spit it raw. Unpublished book material.